Thanks, everybody, for showing up to the live stream or downloading after the fact. The Lean Into Art Cast, show where two visual storytellers get together and take a quick walk around a creative topic, usually starting out with curveball, trying to mentally warm up. Then we dive into the main topic, but we start out 1,000 feet up, look at the topic in the abstract, get down on the ground, do some practical, stupid, helpy tips, and then we usually close out with a takeaway, and nowadays with a quest. More on that to come. My name is Jersey Droz, that other guy.
And I am Rob Stenzinger. I'm here. I'm ready to get down and get on up and all that.
I can't say the rest of the song.
I have no idea. I know I'm semi-quoting some disco lyrics, but...
No, that was a James Brown song.
Is it? Oh, yeah. Yes. Wait. It's Dancing Machine?
Oh. Well, maybe. Yeah. It's something machine. Right. Let's right. not go anyway. Back into, I mean, anybody who saw us on Ryan Estrada's show, there's Take a Drink, Ryan Estrada, Obi-Wan Kenobi Ghost, on his game show, Asking for Trouble, we both made it abundantly clear that there are certain areas of pop culture where we are perhaps blessedly, perhaps unforgivably ignorant. So, but it was fun.
Oh, it was a ton of fun. And it was neat. Yeah, because, I mean, we talk like smarty pants sometimes here. And you know what? It's all context, right? I mean, you put Einstein on the football field, you're probably going to get laid out, right?
Yeah.
And there are many places that are like that football field for me.
I think it's very, very cool that you're so at peace with that.
But here I'm Lawnmower Man, so watch out.
He has a poorly rendered Tron suit and really scary eyes. Watch out. So yes. You promised, well, you didn't promise. You mentioned before we started recording a curveball. We always start with a curveball. I am curious. I'm dying to know.
Yeah. Okay. Oops. So, it's like an established thing. Kind of one of our themes is you know, we try to deal with hard topics, and we try to not be prescriptive, right? I mean, we're open to a wide world of possibilities when we answer something. Yet we proceed anyway in the midst of that ambiguity. And aren't we enlightened or what have you? But that's kind of a theme that keeps coming up, right? So I have a hunch that. So when someone goes to you with like really direct advice, right? I'm wondering, is that, and so this is like the beginning of the curveball. This isn't the curveball. So direct advice where you know they're about to take that and apply it to their actions, mm-hmm. right?
Should I stay in school or should I not stay in school?
Exactly. So how comfortable is that for you? And and I hope you're ready for everyone.
So is the bigger question, how do I deal with that?
How do you deal with that? And and you can actually wrap it into this, which is the curveball, which is so I'm thinking really hard about the Polytechnic Cast and what to do next, because what it started out as, I mean, yeah, some projects grow and change, right? And especially my projects. it's certainly a theme. I'm really thinking about where to go next with the Polytechnic Cast, and where I could be of service with it, and what form that could take. Because really, all that I have time for right now, I love doing custom art and the show notes and stuff, and just it's like a craft that I got a real taste for, and enjoy. Just I have fun doing it. But I don't have time for that form of it. So I've been hunting and hunting. I think I found an app that's going to help me do this, but like just to do just a good enough podcast for me. But then I don't know what form it should be. And should it be the Polytechnic Cast anymore and all that?
Okay. So you threw a bunch of questions at me. That was not an either or question, right?
Nope.
That was one where that was more of a philosophical exploratory. And actually, I think it ties into our theme or our topic today in a big way.
Maybe.
I think so. Especially when I get to the examples that I have for the discussion. Okay. But God, I hate teasing like that. And I just did it. Oh, I'm that guy.
well, after our sponsor, no. Psych, no sponsor.
Well, it's like when you tease so vaguely that like it's like, boy, something really cool is gonna happen today. Just you wait. That's the worst. Because nobody's interested in that. Nobody. So it's not even.
Dude, well, okay, so put it binary. Does the Polytechnicast die and get reborn?
Mm. Okay. So going back to the initial question, I'll use this as a modeling exercise, because I have been asked by several former students of mine, should I go to art school? Should I not go to art school? Oh, I'm in art school. Should I stay or should I go? And what I do is subscribe to the, here comes the nerd stuff, the Tolkien elf philosophy of don't go to the elves for advice because they'll say both yes and no. I'm paraphrasing largely, but basically that's the gist of it. No. Is they're never going to give you a direct answer. They're just going to say, well, could go either way.
It depends.
No, but what I do with that question is I give them two options. I say, here are the two endpoints. And here are the two different travels to those two endpoints. These are the most reasonably predictable outcomes of both paths. Which one sounds more like you? Because I can't. There's no way I'm taking that responsibility to tell somebody what to do with their life. So in the case of a student who is saying, "I want to drop out, mom and dad don't want me to," what should I do? Should I just muscle through these final 2 years of college, or should I start working on freelance? And I said, well, I looked at the students work and I very honestly said to them, I think your stuff is good enough that you could probably start getting some freelance work now, but you're gonna have to bust your butt. And I said, you're gonna have to make a month by month plan that you can show your parents to show that you're gonna take this seriously as a business. You're gonna go get a doing business as license. You're gonna get, you know, a tax ID number. You're going to treat this like a business and you're gonna work as hard as you are in school right now on this business, right? And then I said, or you stay in school and you just go through all these exercises that aren't pleasing to you but are teaching you something. And then when you get out of school, then you figure out, you know, you start up your freelance career because you don't have time for it right now doing studio art projects and so on. But so Polytechnicast, I would say, does it die or does it evolve? If it evolves, may find new listeners who may go back to the archives, may get to morph back to its old form again because it's your property, you get to do what you want with it. Or you do it the other way and then you just have a new property, a new project, and new expectations are set. Mm-hmm. And then I would also throw on to that, how many people do you know are listening to it? How many people are you disappointing? Right? Not that that should be a really big factor, because even if you have a million people listening to it, it's still yours. Although that's a whole other topic we can go into at a later time about like the weird relationship between creator and fans, because then fans inevitably begin to own part of the thing by virtue of being fans of it. Or do they, right?
You're so elf. Yeah.
So, yeah. I struggle with that question a lot, you know, because like on the one hand, you can't deny that the fans help propel the thing. Your level of success is, you know, hinges on support of your constituency. But on the other hand, you're the person who created the constituency through the act of making the thing, right? Mm-hmm. Or a chicken and egg cycle. So
yeah, very much so.
I don't want to turn into like this kind of like Ayn Randian, you are the living generator, therefore all beauty and art comes from you and you alone, and all of those hangers-on are just the hangers-on, so ignore them. But at the same time, you know, you will only create work that pleases your constituency if it's coming from this natural place of your heart and all that dumb stuff, right? I don't know if I said anything there, Rob.
Okay.
I might have just done like a whole bunch of talking.
Well... I respect your approach. I respect your approach. And this is my impish joy. I feel satisfied that I threw a curveball and that I can't tell if you hit it. You turned into a puff of smoke and I saw bats that just poked out from every angle from this cloud and they went and the ball got hit, I think. Maybe. But I can't see where it went.
It was a foul.
Feels a little foul, but I think you hit it. So
maybe I connected wood to leather there. I'm not sure.
Exactly.
But I mean, I don't know. I mean, I don't think when you're not, if you're not getting, like, if your business isn't hinging on this thing, then I think you have the flexibility to be playful with it. This actually ties into, do you want to kick in the topic? Because I think this
I think it's time. It's cool. It totally does.
It segues into it because you're actually hitting on something that I'm feeling a little bit bristly about.
Okay.
So with that, I got some new transition music to play as we go into topic. So let's hit in the topic. We're gonna go 1,000 feet up. This is the long one. I think it starts fading out pretty quickly. Nice uplifting, up tempo music to take us 10,000 feet up to discuss our topic, the different kinds of perseverance. I don't know how to preface this one. I mean, I feel like I could say, well, there's these articles that I read that inspired this, but maybe we could just do a quick one sentence framing of what this topic is.
Mm-hmm.
And how we plan to approach it, and how I want to use the Polytechnicast example as a basis for meditation on this, as well as my own comics work.
Oh gosh, we can use certainly many other examples as well from my from the Polytechnicast was never done with intent for profit, so we could compare it to Guitar Fretter, for instance.
Okay.
Which, so you mentioned that the topic, let's both attempt a brief summary. So like the idea of perseverance. And so you hit some kind of, struggling point with a project and what do you do? So chances are we're assuming some interesting things about this point of struggle, right? Where it's probably gone on for a long time. This isn't just like one difficult day of producing a lot of work, right? We're looking at something that's, who knows, has gone on what, maybe a few months to a few years?
Could be a nagging something sensation in the back of your brain for like a couple of years even that you just could only recently put words to, right?
And, but all of a sudden you're at this point of struggle and then you start to make struggle with trying to make judgments on it where you're like the Polytechnicast question, does it live or die? Does it, or does it change or, you know, metamorphosize? What do you do? Mm-hmm. And then there's of course, very authoritative voices on the topic that can sound compelling and echoing each of these dang ideas, right? Where you see, where I think that's partially the role of some of the articles we've, you know, noticed lately, right?
Yeah. We can address these articles real quick because we'll refer to them probably quite a few times in the discussion, but right up front, it begins with Calista Brill's article, When to Give Up, which was run on the First Second blog, which got a little bit of, it dusted some people up a little bit, and there was some people who felt pretty fired up about the topic. I'll admit to myself that, you know, that when I was reading, I was like, come on, at some points in the article. But it dealt with the very difficult topic of, if it's not working, should you give up? And I don't think it's as cut and dried as a question to answer as never or, you know, sometimes. I think that, you know, it's such an individual thing. And then as a follow-up article, this wasn't written as a follow-up, but I thought it was very timely because it came shortly afterwards, is that Dave Roman wrote an article on the Astronaut Academy site, Before You Give Up, Try Changing It Up, which that got passed around quite a bit too. And his, to summarize, paraphrase very poorly, is he said that, you know, if it's not working, maybe you should just try something completely different, right? And this is something we've kind of beat on the Lean Into Artcast quite a bit, is like, try a mini comic, do something that you've never tried before, give yourself some creative exercises to kind of bust out of that funk and whatever. But the interesting thing that I like about this polar dichotomy is that, no, you should never give up, you should persevere. You should just keep on punching, even if it's not working right now. It may. That's a story we love to tell ourselves, right? It's always darkest just before the dawn. It's in the end of Act Two where things look bleakest, and then Act Three kicks in, you know. Or, you know, there's another way to persevere is to not give up on the pursuit, but maybe give up on the project. Maybe it's the project. So maybe that's the dichotomy I'm drawing here, is that, is it the pursuit itself or is it the project that needs to be rethought? Now, you had another way of looking at this. Then we can like throw it, all this confetti up in the air and see which ones look like the shimmering ones that we want to take on.
Let's see, to pile well, that can come up later, but to pile one more thing on this as far as philosophy that can help or build, either help resolve the tension or even build more tension on these kinds of things is like, well, what if you delayed the decision? And, you know, maybe you're starting to deal with this because you know you want to come to some conclusion, but you choose a different philosophy that allows you to hold off because, well, that can be comfortable. And I know I've chosen that from time to time, and because I've always enjoyed the idea. Let's see, there's a where in the world did I come across it? It was either Bruce Lee or, you know, Taoism or something. That you know, the idea that how water is an incredibly powerful thing, and so some of that's Bruce Lee's, you know, discussion about being flexible and being like water. But I've heard other philosophies say that, well, for instance, water can be infinitely patient and it carves mountains, right?
Yeah.
So you have the task, which is like the mountain, and then you're the water. And how long do you want to go at it? Eventually you will carve through it. So do you just kind of suck it up still? Keep carving?
Right.
Yeah.
How long am I going to keep punching at this thing and not getting what I want out of it, whether it's attention, money, popularity, whatever word you throw at the word, whatever word you think of or associate with the word success, right?
Exactly.
And then that's where, I mean, there's a whole other attitude, or there's a whole other thing that we're hinting at here is like, well, what do you want out of it? But I got a feeling we're going to come to that.
Well, you know what? Maybe it makes sense to hit that too, because we're in the high level strategizing mode, right? We're thinking about it in the really abstract. And one thing when I hear these kind of observations where, okay, either you or someone else is making a judgment call that's stuck in your craw about the thing you're making. Mm-hmm. And why is it stuck in your craw? And why? Okay. Then if you can't answer that, then try to consider, well, why do artists make stuff? Why are you making this thing? And then I think in the motivations where you can start to find matches and mismatches. So you mentioned, are you doing it for money or to please a lot of people, or, you know what, or is it just skill building?
To use my own recent work as an example of this, because, you know, self-centered, that's all I can do. I went through this several years ago when I was doing the Sugary Cereals website, and, you know, I'm doing all this work to get this thing updating every day, working with all these other artists, and it was so much fun, but it was also an immense amount of work to negotiate, you know, printing schedules and then doing all the pagination myself, writing blog posts, writing the introduction page, managing communication with all of the different artists and, you know, keeping 3 months schedule ahead of time, doing all that myself. It was a lot of work. And I had that moment where I was like, why am I doing this when nobody's visiting the site? Because it didn't get a whole lot of traffic. And then I heard myself say, I just want lots of kids to read my comics. I want lots of kids to read my comics. And then that's when it was like, ding, 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 ding. Maybe webcomics isn't the place for that, because kids aren't going to HTML pages and flipping through my CMS to enjoy comics, right? And this is pre-iPad and everything. And I know that that's changing thanks to the iPad. But even then, when I'm teaching kids, I never hear them say like, oh, have you ever been to www.insertwebsitenamehere.com? That's my favorite comic, right?
Yeah, and different ages, different generations come up with their own habits as far as music listening and media consumption and all that. And that is really challenging and often expensive information to tune into, to be really precise about it, to know where exactly, right, you know, 5 days from now, should I be launching this thing?
Yeah.
You know.
But it was a big tip off to me that perhaps I don't need to be as intense about the webcomics pursuit. I can put stuff on the web. I love putting stuff on the web. I love giving my stuff away, and I love allowing my adult readers to have access to my stuff. But when I realized, when I verbalized my goal like that, it changed the way I thought about what I'm going to do next with the next thing that I take on.
Oh my God. The whole webcomics thing in general, like, okay, so you had a journey with webcomics. I also had a journey with webcomics, and you started before the giant movement, right? I was surfing on the wave of the new bursting generation, all high and excited off of making, what was it called? Making webcomics? So was that the book?
How to make webcomics.
How to make webcomics. There you go. And honestly, I had no assumptions of, you know, exact levels of success, right? I don't know. I grew a small but, you know, interested audience in Art Geek Zoo, and I started to, you know, connect with other creators and all that stuff through it. And but all the while, like, having a lot of different, you know, blind spots and assumptions that were like, oh, okay, if I do this thing, it's going to somehow lead to this. Again, so my assumption as an artist, like, well, why was I doing it? Well, I thought that even though I didn't have a precise answer to how it was going to lead to sustainable income, right? I felt like, I think if I keep going this way, I'm going to do something that will lead to sustainable income. Most business plans that have that in it don't get funded and whatnot. Like, that's a terrible business plan. It's a really good idea for, you know, like, hey, I'm doing my own thing because I want to learn from it, right? But different expectations, right? Mm-hmm. And I think that's a very interesting progression that it seems I've noticed a few people after they've done it for a few years, they'll tend to fade away from it. And I wonder if that has to do with finally facing that kind of tension as far as, well, I expected one thing, it's not occurring. Mm-hmm. And isn't that like the oversimplified version of sanity or insanity, right? Mm-hmm. Where you keep doing the same thing, expecting a different result.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's how the saying goes.
Yeah.
So, yeah. We kind of went all over the place there, but
totally
this idea of I really being honest and trying to identify what the heck you want out of the thing in the first place, right?
Yeah.
That'll give you. So go ahead. What were you gonna say, Rob?
Well, okay. So yeah, I think you have. That's one way to simplify it, but let's not leave the struggle yet. Right?
No.
Like, let's hang out in the struggle and say, well, what are some things to,
Can I get at one of the things, like you talked about, like, yeah, things, please, stuck in people's craws. This is what sticks in my craw about this topic is, cool, there is a tendency among some people to think that if you, for instance, I gave up on updating a webcomic weekly or daily. Therefore, I have admitted failure. I have admitted defeat by saying that out loud, by demonstrating it. What have you done, Jersey? You know, you don't have your iconic comic strip character. You don't have your 5-day-a-week thing. So because you found out that the web comics, the traditional how to make web comics model didn't work for the thing you wanted to do, you failed by doing that. So, like, when we go back to, you said at the top, projects grow and change, especially my projects grow and change. And you chuckled when you said that a little bit, right?
Oh, yeah.
And I have to wonder if that chuckle came from a little bit of that self-effacing humor of, you know, you can't just find something and just see it through. There's like this whole majesty surrounding this idea of muscling through. But I think there's an equal interesting way of looking at it, and going back to Dave Roman, of this idea of, no, I'm not going to be inhibited by people's expectations of me. I'm going to constantly change and evolve, and I'm going to constantly be this is the hacker's ethos, is ship and iterate, right? And then if it needs to get thrown out, throw it out and start over and try something new. So when it comes to the Polytechnicast, let's talk about that again. Is part of your hesitation to just start something brand new and just let the Polytechnicast sort of hibernate for a while. Let's not call it pod fade. Let's not call it hiatus. Let's just call it hibernation. It's hibernating. It might come back. You're just letting it sleep right now while it germinates or gestates or whatever word you want to use that sounds like it's organic processing of something.
Made some sarcastic comments and then got cast into carbonite. Yep.
There you go. That works too. But so then let's synthesize here and say, we talked about asking what you want. If you name something new, would it seem like, if you came up with a new name for this different way of doing things, does it seem like it might feel a little bit more exciting to you? Does it seem like it would tickle that like experimentation bone in you? Or would you feel bad about putting an old project to rest?
Well, I'd feel bad only because I never had a great prescription of what I was doing it for. Mm-hmm. Right. So I don't know what the satisfying conclusion is of the Polytechnicast.
Mm.
Like, I don't, what's closure on the Polytechnicast? No idea. Right.
Oh, man,
yet so I do have new ideas too, well, I realized the value of, let's see, bringing something of use or entertainment to an audience in a way that is approachable to that audience. So it becomes part of their vocabulary, because, and maybe that's the ownership thing, right? Where I have to give up some ownership in a way to call out and say, yeah, I'm here to help this group or to be of whatever, entertainment, utility, whatever.
Right.
But to be recognizable by this group and to, you know, do it with sincerity, right? But you know, I'll just say, for instance, I'm not going to reveal titles or details or whatever, but I've got ideas for maybe switching focus on a podcast that was more about just purely the interactive design, could be user experience, could be whatever. And I know that stuff comes up on the Lean Into Art podcast too, but like make that fully the premise and like, and make it more approachable to those audiences because of that premise. Mm-hmm. And that safe, consistent promise. As opposed to like, this is the general struggle of one artist and his, you know, his need to just be general and whatever. And
all right. Anyway, let me pick apart some of the language you used here.
Cool.
Because this is actually pretty good, because you're driving back into devils. I'm going to be my own devil's advocate here.
Sweet.
Because I was just bashing on the idea of, it really irks me when people express the opinion that, oh, such and such webcomic folded. Well, I guess they just gave up. I guess they failed. I guess they didn't have the chops in order to do it, you know? But there is a sense of, you said the words safe, consistent promise. That suggests that you did your due diligence to sit down and think through the project before you started to execute on the project. Now, I just celebrated the hacker's ethos, but there's also something to be said for delivering something that feels like, no, I thought about this, guys. I thought about this, and this really works, and I think it's going to be really good. Mm-hmm. Rather than, let's just paint on a wall and see what happens, right? I love both of those things, personally. So I'm depending on the author and who's executing on that kind of idea. But quitting can feel like, for you as the creator, like you use the word sense of closure. I think that's great. That is so great. Cause yeah, you do need, I mean, we talked in the past about, you need like to have like the me party when you finish something. You need to have some kind of ceremony surrounding this stuff to mark time and mark the accomplishments. But also when something ends, having a sense of finality and closure, right? Not even in a celebratory sense, but in like a solemnity sense, like, okay, well, it's gone. I'm going to miss it, but it's good that it existed because it accomplished X, Y, and Z. But if you don't feel like it did any of that, if you're not sure what it did, that can feel messy to you. But then to your audience, it can come across as, well, I guess he didn't mean it. He was approaching it half-heartedly, right?
Yeah. And that's a cultural expectation mismatch too, right? So it's funny.
Shadowingtronics is bringing up art and story as an example here. That's actually a good example. That's something where we had to wrap it up because we felt like it was done.
And it's, yeah. And so the audience expectations, I wonder what happens with that. It's almost like a, I don't want to be too flippant as I categorize this, but I'm winging it. Okay. So consider that as a, you know, qualifier. I wonder if as audiences, we get our expectations mismatched from time to time, because we look at projects in a way that matches a lot of a lot of the media we consume, right? So we consume media that is built by large corporations quite often, right? With way different structures and supply chains and resources than an individual creator has, right? An individual creator cannot match the brand consistency of Kool-Aid or Coca-Cola or Marvel or
and if you've ever done any work, if you've ever done any work in licensing, licensing art, that truth is just driven into you like a railroad spike when you do your 90th change on that drawing of Kool-Aid Man, because corporate said, you know, the curl on the eye is exactly this many degrees and you missed it. So yes, I had a visceral agreement with that statement. An individual artist cannot match what they're doing. So continue, please. Sorry.
And you know what? This is not a vilification. They're different machines, but I think we confuse them for the same machine. They both please me. I'm entertained by both of these things. And then I go from one to the other, and maybe I expect the same kinds of things out of them, because you know what? Some individual creators can bring it. So they can bring it and be awesome, and which is wonderful. Yet, are they going to have as many t-shirts as a corporation would be able to offer you, right? Are they going to have as many, you know, variant products or the interactive version of their comic and the, you know, you know, what are they going, their resources are limited. Inherently, what they're going to provide you is going to be limited. And inherently, the life cycle of that thing they're providing you is going to be different. Anyway, so that could be a giant different topic, but I think it's that cultural mismatch, the expectations.
I love it. I love that you brought that to this, because, yeah, it's simplistic of me to suddenly say, like, well, things should have a beginning, middle, and end. You know, when Art and Story concluded, it had run its course in the sense that we felt like the time was right. We felt like we were still riding high. We had a lot of popularity of the show. A lot of people were loving what we were doing, and we wanted to end it before it started to get boring or sour to us, and we started phoning it in, right? We got to make that call, much to a lot of people's disappointments. I still, to this day, get an occasional message from somebody who is expressing longing for it, and I could tell that there's some bitterness in there. Like, I turn my back on them. And then it always says, like,
it's hard. Everyone deals with grief, because honestly, when you get that attached to something, so I don't know, we're wandering all stomping on territory of what? Business, psychology.
Yeah. Well, it's all wound into this thing, man.
So now we have the sense of loss, right? Someone has to go through. They're, you know, they have an attachment to this thing that is gone. Now it ended. They didn't expect or want it to end, right? And there you go. And so that's, and once in a while, I think us as individual creators can, it's not just our audience that can have this expectation. We might be expecting ourselves to all of a sudden be creating the next 7,500, 125 year long legacy thing.
Garfield,
you know, Mickey Mouse, what have you.
Well, Garfield and Snoopy are good examples of something that had that machine behind it with one person's name. So when we think of Peanuts, we think of Charles Schulz. When we think of Garfield, we think of Jim Davis. We don't think of the machinery behind that name that's pumping out all this stuff, right?
Right.
He's not making every one of those Garfield toys with the suction cup hands.
No.
But I think that's a good distinction to bring up, and I think that provides people with a new way to approach their own thoughts on as they struggle with this kind of thing. Because I was ready to come at this thing from the whole, like, change is good, but
I think you're right too. Like, I've read the notes you prepped. It's like, this is an awesome angle as well, because you can the path, just because you hit the point of tension, like here you're talking about a different fork in the road, right? I think your fork in the road says, now you're going to regather yourself and come up with a fresh perspective. And it might be to then, you know, to continue the fight, or you may come back to that same fork in the road and go the other way. but I think, yeah, there's some really good, food for thought down the other route.
Well, a key point that I wanted to hit at was, I thought that a good thing to remind people of is not to be like a McLeod acolyte, but I do think his books have some interesting thoughts in there. And in one of the one of his interesting charts he puts together that tends to tick some people off is the 6 steps of the entry point to creativity. And it's from Understanding Comics. I forget which pages it's on, but it's a chapter in the book called the 6 steps. And he defines them as going from the innermost idea to the outermost surface of a craft. It starts with idea, purpose. Step 2 is form. Step 3 is idiom. Step 4 is structure. Step 5 is craft. Step 6 is surface. And he talks about how a lot of people, when they're coming into a craft or a medium or an art form, often, not always, but often they'll be attracted to the surface. They try to copy what they see on the surface. I can draw wiggly lines like my favorite artist, Robert Crumb, draws these wiggly lines. Look, I'm drawing wiggly lines just like him. Cool, I'm a comics artist now. But then when you start digging a little bit deeper and you get through to the other layers, as McLeod defines them, and this is his definition, but then he says that, you know, there's anybody can enter at any different point. But the point that I think is interesting here, the thing that's interesting in taking away, is you are not the same person when you start as when you're in it, right? If you were to ask me when I was 19, why do you want to be a comics artist? Man, I would have given you like a really, you know, maybe close to this answer, you know, as what I would give today. But it would be colored by different things and my lack of experience. And it would be less refined. It's like, I just want to be a famous comic book artist like Todd McFarlane, right? Mm-hmm. I want to be a famous, I want to draw Spider-Man, please.
Yeah, you wanted the dragster, right?
Yeah. Yeah, I wanted to have the McFarlane car.
I mean, yeah, I'm 19, yep. Adoration of you know, the fans, and yeah.
But you see what I'm saying? Is like, all I knew was this kind of rough surface feature approximation of what I wanted. And it wasn't until I started doing it for a while that that changes. And so the point is that you're not who you started out as. And so it's worth it to go back and when you hit those forks, say, well, is it time to try something totally different? Because I may be a different person now. At least that's what I'm going through personally, and that's why I'm hanging on this.
I like this. It's almost like the refinement steps of something that you create. Way to model this too. Mm-hmm. Because some artists will use projects as way to hone their craft, where they are able to now reach different steps better and better by doing multiple projects. And I can't think of quite a name. Let's see. Looking at stacks of comics. Think about like, think of a creator who made multiple series and their first series wasn't as refined as their next, and then their next and their next, right?
Well, we don't have to name names. I'm sure everybody can think of their own creator who fits that description.
Yeah. Okay. So one way to get that new perspective is to set down a current project and say, okay, I did what I could here. Now I'm going to use that as lessons to feed into the next project and then repeat. Actually, you know, I think of some anime and how art styles evolve or whatever. Heck, when I pick Dragon Ball to Dragon Ball Z, right? Mm-hmm. And there's, you know, quite a bit of evolution in the art style, evolution in the storytelling, right? Where I just wrote a post on Inspiration and mentioned him, Akira Toriyama. There you go.
Oh, yeah.
He had lines that were like, what I loved the old work too, right? And it seems like he never quite lost that style, but Dragon Ball Z adopted like a tight line. Muscles were made of something, not flesh, right? After, later on, especially toward like the androids part of this, that series. But before, you know, and then if you trace from there on back, the muscles were, you know, different shape, whatever. And then if you jump way back into like Dragon Ball and thought like, a lot of his moments were less dramatically punctuated and they were about humor. So it's like he figured out his humor voice earlier on. And I think then he refined his dramatic and tension voice, right? Throughout Dragon Ball to then make Dragon Ball Z more about the tension, less about the humor. And anyway, different projects evolving over time within the projects and also jumping to like separate projects as well.
I like what you threw in there too about developing his humor voice. That was one of the things that I thought about as I was wrestling with this topic. Is this part of this? I think part of what is informing these kinds of struggles is really trying to figure out what your voice is. That funny thing called artist's voice. So I'm working on a project right now, which is a bit different than the front or virtually anything that I've done before. Rob, I think you've seen a couple of the pages of this thing that I'm putting together. And I shared it with my buddy, one of my oldest friends who's been familiar with my work since 1994, you know. Uh-oh. You there?
Yeah. Hello.
Okay. My machine just spun up. I heard the drive spinning up and also my video froze. I thought, oh no, the Google Talk plugin crashed.
Yep.
We seem to still be recording. Okay, I'm going to continue with my story. So anyway.
We're good. Yep.
So I shared the pages with him, and he said to me, and I was like, okay, yeah, I'm getting him on the phone. Like, what do you think? And he's like, wow, it's so different than anything you've ever done before. And I'm like, yeah, it kind of is. And he said, but you know what's weird is I still knew it was your work just by looking at it, even though it's in a totally different style, even though it's kind of characters that you usually don't draw. I could still feel the jerseyness in there, if you know what I mean. And I was like, oh my God, that is the best thing in the world I could hear. That is perfect. I mean, even better than saying like, I love the art, it's the best thing you've ever done, because that meant that there's something in my work that continues no matter how much I experiment and play with it. And it reminded me of this whole idea of what's my voice. Whatever he saw in there is my voice. And that's the thing that is the consistency that I can take to whatever project that catches my fancy. So I can live this life that sounds really compelling to me, where I'm always experimenting and changing with my style, always experimenting and changing with projects. But I'm not, that closure doesn't have to be awake. That closure can be, all right, that's that period, that's done. Now it's time to move on to the, does that make sense? Am I saying things that even amount to a general idea here?
So one thing, closure doesn't always have to mean a project dies and you mourn it because now you've given up on that thing. Mm-hmm. It can also be a stepping stone to the next thing.
As you were pointing out with Akira Toriyama.
And let's see, the letting go of it aspect of that change now gives you a pretty incredibly precious resource back, because I wasn't able. So, okay, I will also make this about me too.
Well, you can only speak from your own
what
experience,
else can
dude.
You? And,
well, I suppose yeah, I'm happy. If you were an academic, then you'd be able to cite all of these examples from, you know, textbooks of people's lives, I suppose.
True.
Just to be fair.
Yeah. Very true. And that can be incredibly useful. But since I did not do that research, I do recall. So working on Art Geek Zoo, which I was starting to switch over to this, you know, like I'm going to give it a new name, Art Geek Zoo, The Way of Sound, blah blah blah. And I started working on Guitar Fretter, and I knew that I could not produce all the above at the same time, at the same rate. So by letting projects have some flexibility when you are an individual creator, and if you're doing so much, like your role is so actually multifaceted and many hat wearing role kinds of, you know, many roles actually. Your involvement is many roles, I guess that'd be the better way to put that.
Yeah.
Then all the better when you can recapture your resources and recapture some of your time and your energy and now focus it and make more impact on the next thing. Because I know I wouldn't have been able to figure out all sorts of things surrounding Guitar Fretter and to have released it and then at different times go through large updates, because that just consumed way more time than would work to then have all those other things going on with ArcGeekZoo.
And one final thing that I would throw in to, and we do got to get to the on the ground stuff because we've been on this thing for 30 minutes now, is, oh man, have you ever, Rob, started something, whether it's just for entertainment purposes or whatever, like you walk into an arcade, you go to Pinball Pete's in Ann Arbor, right? You got a pocket full of quarters. You sit down at the Galaga, Ms. Pac-Man combo game. Mm-hmm. Plunk in that quarter. You have to make a choice. I'm going to choose Galaga. Mm. Well, now this is the only game I get to play. That was the first one I chose. It has to be the right one. And if it's not, then I've failed at my Pinball Pete's experience. No, you bounce around and you find the game till you find that Golden Axe cabinet. And you go, oh, where have you been all my life? But...
Oh, yeah.
So my point is that, and I mean, I'm not trying to be glib here. It's just that my point is that, it's a commonly held assertion in the arts that your first idea isn't always your best. Sometimes it is, but you still don't know unless you try something else, right? You got to have some kind of basis for comparison there. And I don't think that we necessarily have to feel like we have to rush into this thing and overcommit to something. I think before somebody decides to give it up entirely, that maybe they just need to rethink. Like Dave Roman suggested, they just need to rethink the thing that they're making through the medium before they give up on the medium.
And I would tack on to that. And why?
And why? And why you want to do it.
And then are you getting is the why panning out? So if you're doing it just to build your skills, or not to overextend our initial section, but I was also doing some re-listening to Natalie Goldberg's Writing Down the Bones. Mm. And I will not quote her exactly, but in essence, one of her huge points in the book is that she's a proponent of developing a writing practice. And that is, she's kind of elfish because she will characterize it in two different ways very strongly. It is to just get things out of your head and you do literally develop the muscle memory to be writing. And all your faculties that are involved, whatever the quality is of whatever's coming out, so what? You are practicing writing. And then she'll also come at it from the you are honing your craft and the words that come out are getting better and you will be able to be more present in observing and highlighting the right details as these words are coming out. So, which is totally in conflict with the other approach, but you know, such is so many things in the Lean Into Arcast and in the rest of everything. So with that in mind, she said, or she was characterizing, well, why do you do this? Like, and for her, a bee in her bonnet is related to poetry because she is a very, I have not read her poetry. I would not be surprised if she was an incredibly skilled poet. However, overall poets are not even looked up as highly as comic artists, I would say. As far as general appreciation of their skill and all that.
That's not something you can say at a lot of parties and people being understand what it is that you do.
Right? Exactly. The comic artist grumping and going like, oh man, people don't understand. And then the poets are like, shut up.
You want to talk about a business that's hard to monetize.
Exactly. So anyway, she was saying that it was a little bit, it was very hippie and whatnot, but essentially just writing because you love the world and being in it. So I think that has a little bit to do with finding your voice too, because are you doing it to please you? Right. And then if the answer is yes, and you have the ability to do it and all that kind of, I don't see where the, but I think it helps to ask why. And to not, like if you are getting clouded and it's, you know, starting to compare to like, well, I'm not building the Penny Arcade kind of traffic. Oh no.
Oh man, that's another good one. Yeah. Cause that is a pitfall. That is a trap.
But then you realize how happy you are when you're making an update to your comic. What other victory do you need? Anyway.
Right.
All right. So I just thought that, you know, that's very high level and whatever, but well, let's get into some strategies.
That's exactly why we call it 10,000 feet up. So with that, let's go ahead and hit the ground and I'll try some fun. A little triumphant. Calling people's attention to the podcast. For those who had us out in the background while they were just working and they were kind of like, out.
What? Trumpet?
What? Oh.
Exactly.
No, actually, my brother, the musician, he really, really pushed me hard on stingers. He's like, mm-hmm. They're so great because they, you know, it's, he brought up my teaching work and he said like, he's like, the way you use your voice in a classroom when you see that kid starting to lose his attention or nodding off and you just do something with your voice like that and suddenly the kid's like, oh, whoa, whoa. He's like, that's what stingers are for. And he's like, yeah, it may seem kind of crass and tacky to use them, but it's a super effective means to get people attentive to something or to notify them that closure, new thing, right? So
exactly.
That's why we use them, besides the fact that it's just fun to play Robotech music on the show. So on the ground, let's blast through this quickly because I think we've made a pretty strong case for how this is a very complicated subject. And it is. But we've got some tools to help with that. I'm gonna get to the more advertising ones. But I want to start with this one first, mini comics again. But I would specifically say do a freelance mini comic where you define an audience other than yourself, and this would be like to break yourself out of a creative funk where you say like, am I just bored with this project or am I bored with comics, or insert whatever medium there, right? If you're a songwriter, do a freelance song where you say you define a specific audience and say. And you have to think hard about what they expect, what they want, who they are. Why do you want to please them? And I think it's especially challenging if you make it like a group that you've never tried to please before, because that makes you think extra hard about like the intended audience thing. It makes you reapproach that idea afresh. That's neither here nor there. But like, what's the benefit you get out of that is you get to see what I consider to be a more objective view of your skills. Because you get to look at what you make trying to accomplish this very specific, unusual goal for yourself. And you won't be as attached to it personally. And it'll make it easier to judge. What are you going to say, Rob? You look thoughtful.
I think it's a classic debate that I think is full of baloney. But it's an old term, but I think it fits. It's where you can develop. It's a fun way to exercise commercial art skills. Mm. It's commercial art, right? It I mean, is, yeah. Versus, yeah, because you that this could be one of the things that maybe a lot of this whole why this topic comes up, because we look to a lot of really great, skilled, authoritative voices. They're authoritative for a reason because they have dedicated, you know, countless hours to their craft, and they've, you know, now they're working and making money at it in a, you know, commercial way. And they inherently have that perspective when they're saying, well, I don't know. I mean, is this viable? And they don't mean, does it please you or are you getting better at it? They mean, is it going to make an audience throw money at you mm-hmm. in some way, whether in large quantities or small? Mm-hmm. What is it? What does it mean in a business context? And what a cool way to practice that kind of awareness, but this mini comic exercise.
Yeah. And I don't mean it to be as cheap or crass is like saying, oh, you're building your marketable skills. I mean, it's a way to distance yourself from the work a little bit. Because I'll tell you, when I'm doing freelance illustration, I'm working on a project right now, and I feel no personal attachment to it whatsoever. When the client came back and said, oh, could you do something about this character's eyes? This guy's eyes look a little weird. I wasn't like, oh, how could you? I sweat night and day on that design, and it represents all these different things that are central to my soul. It was just that, oh, you want something that feels friendly yet professional, but not too professional? Okay, here's a swing at it. And then when they came back and said, fix the eyes, I was like, okay, I'm fixing the eyes.
I wonder if this is a topic for a future episode too, just to tag this, because this is what I consider, like, when I'm operating and fully in that mode, this may sound bad, but I'm like, I'm in mercenary mode now. Like,
yeah,
I'm you know, soldier of fortune here, soldier of creative fortune. Right. And
there's the name of your new show.
No way. No.
I just want to see you all dude it up like Rambo.
Whatever. Okay.
I'm writing it down just in case.
Okay. Thanks, man. Okay. But I really do think that. I think of the word mercenary, because it's like, I am performing the service. I've built all these skills to pull this off. And then when we're bringing money to the table, I consider you as a key partner in this creative exercise. And I do get less attached most of the time. Once in a while, I don't pull it off. Like, I actually will, you know, it'll be challenging to,
sure,
to wrestle with some of the changes and whatnot, and thinking about, well, why is one change challenging versus another and what have you. It's it's totally an interesting big topic.
I agree. And just to acknowledge and honor that point of view, that it's not always as simple as that. I've documented experiences working on freelance projects where Dame Lady Cat, anybody who listened to the Thunder Punch Daily Show heard me talk about that.
Classic.
That was a classic where I was really married to this concept, and I felt strongly that I was right. I was pure right, and the client was not right in that situation. And
dude, yep. Some people try to muck with what the mercenary wants to do, and he's like, you're going to hurt the village. You're going to, yep.
Yeah, that's right.
Exactly.
You want it done sloppy or you want it done right? That's exactly all I got to say. And then you take the toothpick out and flick it.
Yeah.
Soldier of creative fortune. That's pretty good. I'm just imagining like lots of like gleaming gold on the logo and like an extruded font. Like, mm-hmm, very like, what was that series in the 80s with, it was the Indiana Jones knockoff TV series. Like the
Tales of the Golden Monkey.
Tales of the Golden Monkey. Yeah. Something like that.
Hmm. Funny.
All right. Think about it. All right. So in terms of another, this is going back to the whole, like, if you are doing this just to make yourself happy and you want to try a different kind of creative change of pace, we happen to have, the next step is to go to leanintoart.com/workshops, because we got two things in there that are designed specifically for that purpose. Storytelling games like Sequences and Consequences, the workshop, and the Headline Mashup workshop, which are both experimental comics making workshops that we have in there for download, DRM free. But just to put it in a nutshell, Sequences and Consequences is a game where we take a sequence of story without an ending, and we draw it on some index cards, like this, and then we rearrange the story to try to find an equally logical order of events. And there's two things you're looking at there. One, you're seeing, like, how does changing the sequence, this is like comes right out of storyboarding. This is a storyboarding exercise, right? Like, where you put all the storyboards up on a cork board and, like, oh, this scene needs to move over here, this scene needs to move over here, change the way it feels, Pulp Fiction, that kind of thing. But also, it's about what moments are you focusing on? When I write the words, there is trash strewn about, where did you put your eye when you decided to show me that moment? That is a revealing thing about you as a storyteller.
It's and you get to build up that vocabulary of the choices and being mindful about that. And so, yeah, really great practice. And they're awesome workshops.
Aww.
And I know, I'm a whatever. I'm like the razor guy, right? exactly. Like the company so much. Or is that the hair club guy? Whichever.
Yeah. I'm also a client.
I'm also, client.
Shadow Electronics is saying insert A-Team theme here. Always talking about the Soldier of Creative Fortune. And if you can find them, you just may be able to hire. And now Rob blasts through a wall in a van covered in armor that he made from spare parts he found in the toy warehouse.
Mm-hmm. Sheet metal the van. It's awesome.
Anyway, then the other one is sequences, or rather headline mashup. And that is just pure improvisational storytelling exercise where I can report, and anybody who's listened to my stuff for a long time has heard me report on this, is that I learned a lot about myself as a storyteller by doing this. Because one of the things that I think I want out of my work is telling stories that are really sunny and positive and upbeat and good for kids. Yet every story I wound up writing in this improvisational game all had some kind of bleak outlook or outcome. Well, except for one. There was one happy one. But then like the rest of them were like a man being stranded on the moon with a fellow astronaut who's slowly losing his mind. And he needs that fellow astronaut to get home. And it just ends with the hanging. Is he going to get home or not? And when I finished, I was like, oh, God, I don't like this at all. This is not what, this isn't in my heart. So both of those things are designed to just knock you out of your comfort zone and try something completely new. Now I'll hand it over to you, Rob. Did you have any that you wanted to?
Well, let's see. Exercises for this. You know, I did, and it's totally escaping me. I'm not even going to BS you. Getting in a different perspective. Like, I remember my thing now because
you vamped enough.
Vamped a little bit. It's pick a small creative challenge. there's some recurring actual creative challenges that we're mentioning at Lean It's Art via quests, right? And essentially those are meant to be bite-sized and fit into your life, you know, whatnot. Not to complain, but like a lot of creative challenges can be wild, huge, distracting events, which are wonderful, awesome adventures in and of themselves. 24-hour comic day, looking at you, 30 characters in 30 days, looking at you. And tomorrow, it doesn't have to be that extreme.
At the time of this recording, tomorrow is... February 1st, it's a one-hour comic day. Are you familiar with this? I only became familiar with this myself just today.
Really? I am not familiar with this.
Okay. I guess the idea is that every hour you're awake on one-hour comic day, you are to draw a panel of a story. And I think the general idea is to capture your life as a cartoonist. So it's like from 10 o'clock to 11 o'clock, here's what I did, one panel of what I did. And then at the end of the day, you have an X amount of panels for however many hours you were up that tell a story of your day.
Panel per hour, not a page per hour.
Panel per hour. Yeah.
Nice.
So, and I was looking at that and I was like, I wonder if I should do that tomorrow. That might be fun. But then I think about everything else I got to do. I don't know if I'm going to be able to do a whole... every hour, and I don't want to do a half-hearted attempt at it. You know, I don't want to go, here's my 3 hours, bye. I slept the rest of the day, bye.
I was caught in a snowstorm these hours. All right,
but anyway, yeah, so any of these challenges can be enough to push the edges of your very, very busy life. So yeah.
And get new perspective. Cause I really do think so. Like the new perspective, the reason that I harp on that is because it's about gleaning the insight from your experience you already have. Right. It's the new perspective. It's like I don't know. I've reused this example a lot, but it's like when Bill and Ted, when they remind each other to plant the keys and then they benefit from it. Right. Mm-hmm. I don't know. Because they didn't know the first time they went through the time loop, but then they knew, and then so they changed it anyway.
Yeah. Right. Yeah.
It's a little more relevant than it seems. Anyway.
But, and then these side things that you do, these creative challenges, this is one of the benefits that I wanted to highlight here is, so what? So I gain a little bit more perspective. So I feel a little bit better about myself as an artist. Squishy, squishy. Well, you know what? In a more practical sense, because this is the on the ground segment. This gives you more stuff to blog about. Blogging is hard for a lot of people. For visual storytellers, I think, maybe more often than not. And finding the time to blog and finding something to blog about, especially if you're like the kind of person where it's like I was having this discussion with a friend the other day, and they were kind of ribbing me about like, oh, so you share all your sketches online, huh? And I'm like, yeah. Like, look, I don't go to my office and like, hey, I sharpened a pencil, got a better tweet about it, better Instagram it. Hey, I cleaned my keyboard, better take a picture of it, Instagram it, Twitter it, you know, and they're making fun of me for like sharing all my little piddly things online. And I thought about that. I'm like, yeah, you're right. You know, maybe it's probably because of the people I follow, but you know, that doesn't seem like something where it's like, you know, your day to day at a lot of day jobs isn't something that's terribly shareable unless there's like drama going on. It's like, oh, Betty came to work drunk again, you know, something that's scandalous, or salacious, or exciting.
And even then, it's only like anonymously shareable because then it's an HR incident.
Exactly. So it's like, well, what do you share in the meantime? Do you want to share all your crummy sketches like I do? Or you could take the creative challenge. This is giving you more stuff to add to your blog, right? So benefits.
Yeah, that's a good point. Sharing you, it's basically how people do travel journals, right? Mm-hmm. And that gives them something to talk about. So here you go. This is your journey. You can talk about that.
And talking about it is a form of self-reflection that improves your work.
It totally is. Oh, I am a huge proponent of visual storytellers should consider and try writing more. Write more because it only is going to improve everything about what you draw, because you are communicating in both mediums, and the writing aspect, there's something about it that is it's like you're missing part of the atom when if you're only focused on the drawing. The words part, it's so important to our language. So it's probably different parts of our brains I don't know. No, I'm not selling it, but
No, you are. I'm totally.
I agree
150%.
Yeah.
Read more and write more. And when you're reading more, capture what's jumping out at you when you're reading. And I don't mean just read comics. I mean read everything. But yeah, keep a journal book to jot down the things that jump out at you, because when we get to our next segment, I want to talk a little bit about this wonderful, wonderful way that you phrased up what influences and inspirations are.
Oh.
So is that as good time as any to segue?
It's really good. I'm going to add one more thing because we are on the ground, and I was doing like you were trying to land it, and I was pulling back on the plane, right? And I was like, going back up. I'm back on the ground. And one thing I have been doing for, I could look to know for sure, but it's somewhere around 100 some days as I've been using this Day One application and doing journaling. And there's a bajillion other ways to do this. You could just do this on Tumblr if you're comfortable with doing that in public. But for me, I'm trying to practice a more fully expressive, honest writing voice. And I just am totally not comfortable doing that in public. Surprise. So Day One allows me to almost fool myself. Like, it feels a lot like a really beautiful blog engine, but it's private. It's only for me.
Wow, that is like really what am I trying to say? That feels very 21st century internet, right? We've just gone through like a couple decades of share, give it away, get it out there.
What'd you say, Anthony Kiedis? Sorry. Why, Red Hot Chili, give it away now.
Sorry, you made a music reference. You know,
no, a couple.
That just hits my lead forehead and it falls on the ground. The Day One app, huh? Day One.
I will look. Yeah, Day One. It's this is on OS 10 and on iOS. So both iPad and iTouch and iPhone, whatever. And it's a really cool app on all the platforms. It a lot of and there's actually this really Slogger is a script that you can run that will pull in some of your social network things into whatever you configure in it into this app. So like if you do want to just also keep track of your tweets and your your posts to Instagram and whatnot in a private thing and mixed with private pictures, it's like there you go. There's a very a great way to practice that. And the silly app, like when you're using it on your desktop, it'll interrupt you and it goes, ba-dunk, little window comes up. And at first I said, go away, man. I am focused. I'm busy. I'm a machine. Let's go. I'm a mercenary. I'm a creative soldier of fortune. You can't interrupt the creative soldier of fortune. And, lately I started saying, you know what? Okay, cool. What do you got? Here's what's in my head. Boom. I dump it out. And it's quick, and it's not even.
Oh, it pops up to say, "I'm here to capture whatever you're thinking of right now."
Yeah.
So I thought, in other words, I thought you were saying like you're writing into it, and then it's interrupting you to stop your train of thought. But no, it's saying whatever you're thinking of right now, pour it in me.
Yep. Exactly. I know you're working on a diagram. I know you're writing an email. I know you're doing whatever, and I'm interrupting you, and that's time to say stuff.
That's the Zen master thing, man. That's when the Buddhist is sitting in the lightning posture, and then the Zen master comes around with a stick and whacks him in the back. And what's that whack about? It's to say to him, pay attention, be attentive. And what the student does is he bows. His reaction to that is, thank you, sensei. And it's not hazing. This isn't Animal House. This is him saying, remember, pay attention.
Mm-hmm.
Be alert. Be present.
And it's starting to work for me. And anyway, so this is a really great hands-on way to deal with that. And you don't have to have a silly app to do this. But of course, well, it's got some niceties that make it a pleasant and really functional process. Because again, it interrupts and all that kind of stuff. So yeah. Good app. Really good app.
Whatever guy on a podcast streamed live over the internet trying to give us technological solutions to our problems.
Yeah, exactly. I told you. I'm also a lawnmower man.
I know.
Floating technology. Whatever. I don't know.
I'm always anticipating that, you know, like whenever you say something like that, I'm like, yeah, there is that one guy out there going like, whatever, I'll just use paper. Awesome. As long as you're doing the thing.
Great. Yep. Yeah.
Good for you. Thumbs up. All right. Well, with that, then I think what we'll do is it's time to go on a quest, Rob. That was the spark of recognition.
That was exactly. That's Zelda.
No.
Right? No. It's
another Nintendo game.
Metroid. Silly. Okay.
Yes, that is the Samus appears Metroid theme. And I thought that's a good one for questing. Right? Just before she goes off the landing pad and starts shooting people in the face.
That is awesome. We have emerged from our ship, and now we're going to go say hello to the aliens.
And if you play Metroid Prime, that means all the little things have charged you up, all those little charging beams, and your missile launcher is fully equipped. So, questing time. Time to review last episode's quest, Rob.
Yeah. So, okay. What are these quest things, Jersey?
So the Leotard Quests is a new feature that we've launched on the show where every episode we will give a quest, and the quest will be a short creative challenge that should take you somewhere between 20 minutes to an hour. Should be able to fit into your work week, right?
Exactly.
And, you know, they also should be fun to do, and they should be instructive in some way.
Yep.
And you can participate by sharing whatever it is that you made in your heroic quest. We usually create different kinds of tiers of participation, whether there's like a regular quest, heroic quest. We did like different like power-ups, I think I did in the first quest, right? Mm-hmm. Special link power-ups, where if you link to an article that helps other people questing on this thing. And then you can track it by going to Twitter and looking for the hashtag LIA quest and whatever the quest number is. There's the LIA quest is just the general search tag, which everybody should be using if they're posting quests. And if they're posting for a specific quest, also including LIA quest with the quest number. So this latest one is hashtag LIA quest 2.
Mm-hmm.
I should go to Twitter real quick to see if we got any new entries last minute while we talk about.
Oh, cool. Yours. And so while you're doing that, I'll describe it again real quick. So yeah. Quest 2 was named Harvester of Barrow, and bonus points if you know what I'm punning off of for that.
Can I guess?
Yeah.
This is a music reference. And I don't often get music references. So this is the part of the Avengers where Captain America turns around and goes, "Hey, I got that one." Harvester of Sorrow.
Yeah.
Metallica.
By Metallica. Exactly.
Yeah,
off what album?
This kid.
Yep. Off of And Justice for All. All right. Okay. So
Second
Normal
album.
Quest. Third album, actually.
Damn. No, wait.
Fourth. That's embarrassing. Yep. Okay. Fourth album. Okay. So Normal Quest. What this was about is to essentially capture something that has informed your work. Something that I would say has inspired and influenced your work. That and it could just be one thing. could be as it could be really short, where it could be, you know, just a tweet or whatnot. But I was hoping that people would take this and do a quick paragraph, because it's a good writing exercise to think about this, you know, just a quick reflection of wow, yeah, Ghostwriter really did affect me at a very formative time in my life. And I realize some of the things I enjoyed about it on the surface, and some of the things I enjoyed about it more deeply as far as the messages and all that. And I'm talking about the Danny Ketch Ghostwriter in the early 90s. Yeah. And anyway, so I did a post about that initially. And that kind of models what I thought would be the heroic version of the quest, where it's like, write a paragraph or more about the thing that inspired you, and sort of what you made from it, or, you know, how it affected you in some way. This isn't like a word by word prescription. We're not going to necessarily rule lawyer you if you want to participate with us, right? We're trying to, you know, spark some fun exercises with this. Okay. But there's a twist on this one, that's I added this note saying, you know what, including visual storytelling is totally optional, yet welcome, right? Because in the back of my mind, I was reminded of this other thing that I noticed a couple of years ago, that have you ever seen these influence maps people were posting?
I've only come up against them in the last probably 15 months.
Okay.
They're a fairly
it's something about, yeah. Maybe it was only like 15 months as far as this example of it, but I'm trying to remember I'm just pulling up my post and vamping while I do so here. Oh yeah. So this was, essentially a template for people sharing their influences. And it was posted by Matt M. Lukowski, who goes by Fox-Orion on DeviantArt. And it was likely, you know, right, you know, he shared that with the right community, because they glommed onto it. And do a Google search for influence map and watch out, because you're going to see a lot of examples. People really glommed onto it. And I'm super curious for Jersey to get into what he did for it. But yeah, I did two posts on it. You can check them out.
So I have more to report on that. DJ-san. Yeah. Of grayismanga.com did a post. Now, Dee has been a staunch supporter of the show in the past. She's got links to the Leontard cast right on her blog.
Yeah.
But she did a post on it too. So that's at djusan.com. That's DeeJuusan.com.
Awesome.
And
are you looking at it?
I'm looking at it now. And so she cites, what she chose to do is, instead of the influence map, she did just a blog post about it in World Masterpiece Theater. And let's see, Romeo's Blue Skies, Little Women, Tom Sawyer, Heidi, Girl of the Alps, Pollyanna. So this, I guess this is like an anime series of adaptations of some of these things, like Little Women and Tom Sawyer, Heidi. I haven't read the post because I just discovered it now. But here's cool. A line that I picked up on as you were talking. As much as I work on my art, I've always believed that I was a writer before an artist. Anybody who's seen Dee's work, she's as much, if not more. You know, I mean, her work is gorgeous. It's just jaw-droppingly good. But her writing's good too. Yeah. So I mean, I think it's cool that she's highlighting that important part of it. But we'll link to it in the show notes. But did you get there, Rob?
I did. Yeah. Yeah. That's cool. So yeah, that's awesome. And so the whole point of this is to, go through that experience of just unboxing a thing or two that influenced you. So well, Jersey, how did you tackle this one?
This was a lot tougher than I thought it was going to be, Rob.
Mm-hmm.
For a lot of reasons. And, I think my immediate thoughts as I walk away from it was like, this is, and I may have joked about this last week even, is there's that Kathy comic where she's sitting in a cafe and she's making sure that the cover of her favorite book is clearly visible as she's flipping through it. She's making sure that her favorite kind of coffee is sitting there, and like her favorite music album CD is sitting there. And it's like she's setting herself up as, this is the people bazaar. This is the people flea market. This is the people swap meet. And you got to put up all of the display merchandise, say, this is what I'm all about, in order to catch a man kind of thing. That's the joke of it. And I feel after doing this, there was the hesitation of, this is almost a candidness I'm not ready for. Even though when you go to jerseydros.tumblr.com, where I posted mine, and we'll link to it in the show notes, it's like you're going to get there and you're like, this is no surprise. There's nothing surprising here. But anyway, my point is that the idea of naming, the idea of sitting down and saying, this is the hierarchy, this is the structure, was a little daunting to me. And as you pointed out in your blog, because you did a great post on this on your Tumblr, you identified inspiration is what happens when something resonates deep and affects you in the moment. Influence is when that effect lingers and becomes part of what you do. When I read that, I was like, ah, that's it. I need to go back and think of a specific period of my life and just try to capture that. And what, instead of trying to be 10 again and think of what was the most important thing when I was 10, think of which one of these had the most resounding impact on me over time. Does that make sense? That was how I structured my hierarchy. Because the way the influence map works is you arrange the tiles or images by size. Size equals the amount of influence it has on you. Smaller things, less influence, larger things, more.
Exactly. Yeah, that means you're doing a little bit of voting there. And and that can be really hard. I mean, especially for things that are so, you know, emotional with, you know, things like it's tough to pick. Well, what is the most, I don't know, influential book I've ever read or what have you? And I kept, holy moly, if you saw my work in progress, okay, I'm going to admit this took me way longer than an hour.
Oh no.
Yeah, I know. It took me more like, I'm embarrassed. Like it was like most of my Saturday as far as my time to put it, you know, it was like a good 6 hours.
I'm not surprised. I'm not surprised because this took a lot more careful reflection than I expected. It's like, oh, name the things I like. Doy, no problem. And then I sat down and said, oh, but I got to give these a hierarchy. And wait a second. Are these things influence my writing, my art, my philosophy, at what period?
Oh my gosh, exactly. Then like which of my creative interests and the skills that I'm working to build are, yeah, exactly. Am I talking about writing? For me, am I talking about game development and, user experience design and, you know, comics and it's like, ay, 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 what, where, how? Podcasting, right? I mean, it's all these things. So I just decided to step back, squint my eyes and go, here's a salad.
Okay.
And this is true to this moment. What I feel, I could easily see this in many different configurations. And I had to be comfortable with that. And that let me power through and finish it.
It's a pretty good approximation of like, you know, a skim over the surface version of Rob as I know him on here.
Cool. Interesting. So
that's at robstenzinger.com. And I mean, like we can just name, for those who are listening to the, well, and we're not showing these in the video, but
oh,
no, no big deal. I mean, we're almost done here, but you got Dragon Ball Z on there. You got, you know, Security Now with Steve Gibson. You know, this is something that you doesn't come out in the show all that often, but this guy's a personal hero of yours.
Oh yeah.
Strong
Bad.
What's that?
Strong Bad.
Where's Strong
Bad? He's subtle. Strong Bad is the DVD cover, Strong Bad Email .exe. It's below Fooly Cooly. And which is below
this is so
Percy Jackson.
Oh, I see it.
It's too below. Yeah, I know. And so I slightly copped out too, where I actually gathered piles of things that I like and I took pictures of them and cropped them in interesting ways. I don't know. Yeah.
Princess Mononoke gets a pretty big tile.
Yep. A book that I got when I was probably, I'm trying to remember what age I was, honestly. It was somewhere between 8 and 10 when I got this book by Preston Blair about drawing. I've seen it titled different things. I've got a couple of versions of it. This is the recent one. This is not the many year old one. This one is called just Cartoon Animation, published by Walter Foster, but it's by Preston Blair. Anyway, I don't know if you've ever seen that book.
Yeah, I have. I mean, and it's a well respected book, and it's considered one of the books that every artist should have in their collection, right?
Yeah, and I just kind of lucked into it, and but yeah, very influential book on me. And
oh, look at you putting the Art and Story podcast in there.
Art and Stories there, darn right, represent. Yep, TurboGrafx also represents.
TurboGrafx 16.
Yep. That happened to be depicted. Some Turbo HU cards are depicted here, and also the handheld Turbo Express, which lasts the whole 5 minutes with like 99 batteries.
I'm trying to think when TurboGrafx 16 came out. You would have been 18, 19-ish, right?
It's like 17, I think. 16, okay.
17, actually. 16, 17. So that's like a really important time for, especially like what it did. TurboGrafx 16 was also like this, it was the first 16-bit console that came out, you know?
Yeah, debatable. Yeah, it actually, its CPU was 8-bit, but they added a 16-bit graphics processor. It's a controversy. And it's still in the papers, probably not. But it was the first home CD-ROM. And I did have that too, the TurboGrafx CD. And
so it was the Dreamcast before the Dreamcast.
Exactly. Yep.
But yeah, for it to come along at that time and for it to be on your radar too, I'm sure we could probably do a whole episode about TurboGrafx 16.
Yeah, I cleaned many a bowling alley bathroom to pay for that thing. But yeah. Anyway.
Most systems weren't cheap.
Nope. So
what did you get out of doing this? Because you said you did a lot of work to go into it. What benefit did you derive from doing this?
It's so funny. I felt a warm connection to so many artists and their creations that I love. And it was difficult as far as the choosing. And so sure, yeah, there was a little bit of that kind of stress, I guess you could say, but it was celebration almost the whole time. And where I just, maybe I couldn't let go of it. And it took so long because of that, where I was like, oh no, I'm not limiting here. And I just kept digging around and like, you know, throughout my office, throughout the house. And I got some things that were in storage. And I went to town, and you know, 'cause I was like, you know what? These things, I feel so connected and have been affected by them. And it was wonderful to feel that effect and to sift through it and think, well, how did it affect me? And things like the 100 Things Every Designer Should Know. Yeah, that book I read recently, but there was a book by Susan Weinshank I read in the mid-90s that was a huge influence on my whole career in UI and user-centric design. It was called look for a book from the late 90s from Susan Weinshank. Anyway.
We'll link to it in the show notes.
But anyway, it's just wonderful that, and one of her recent works is like just so, like a bolt of lightning, resonant and relevant for me. I'm very happy to see that and celebrate it here. One weird subtle thing, I'm going to point out there's a Sega Genesis cartridge, Revenge of Shinobi, right? Mm-hmm. So after I had gotten over my monogamy with the TurboGrafx 16 and was able to fund the purchase of a clearance shelf Genesis, that was like the first game I actually bought after that. And it actually has Marvel characters in it unlicensed. So they had to later release, actually has DC characters too. So basically Spider-Man's a boss and Batman is a boss and Rambo is in it. So all three of these things became big legal things, and they had to release a new version of it. Anyway. Yep.
But you had the one with those guys in it.
Oh, yeah. In fact, one time I loaned it out to a friend who then supposedly lost it. And I said, you are finding me the exact same version. And they knew what it meant, and they did.
I know that tone of voice. I hear that tone of voice every once in a while when we have Lean Into Art meetings and everybody. And it's not fun to be on the business end of that tone of voice. It smiles, but it's a panther smile.
Anyway.
So, World Masterpiece Theater, I want to back up and talk about Dijusans a little bit. It was Japanese anime that showcased an animated version of a different classical book or story each year at 7:30 p.m. on Sunday. It originally aired from 1969 to 1997, and it looks really good. So that is one of the things that inspired the creator of the fabulous comic Gray Is, which is at grayismanga.com. So thank you, Dee, for participating in the quest.
Awesome. And of course, we will link to this in the show notes. That's one of the things. Yeah. Big old high five. Thanks for participating. So there's no limit on participating. We may do fun new events with old quests and all that kind of stuff. But like, as the quests come out, we do an immediate the episode following a quest release. We do this kind of follow-up. And then, so there you go. We, as a way to celebrate, you get your quest in and we put it in the show notes. So
super cool.
Awesome.
So yeah, we got to move on because we're already at over an hour and a half, and not that I want to truncate anything. It's just that I worry about Google Plus Hangouts after an hour and a half. We've had some problems with that in the past. So next quest, time to announce the new one, LIA Quest 3, and it's my turn to be the quest giver. And this one is inspired by a couple things. One, this is an exercise that I played around with in my comics class, and we had a lot of fun with it. And two, it comes out of, there's a show that's really popular, everybody was watching, called Downton Abbey. I don't know if you've seen it yet, Rob.
I have not. It has been discussed in my house.
Okay, well, there's a character on the show. I mean, you know the premise, right?
No, totally don't.
Okay, well,
I saw someone retweet someone as the character voice in Downton Abbey, and there's evidently like a really harsh matriarch in the series that poo-poos on people.
Dame Maggie Smith might be who they're talking about in there.
Okay,
Cousin Violet. I think that's who she is. Very funny, but anyway, it's just turn of the last century period drama, the UK, right? Rich people in an abbey, upstairs, downstairs kind of thing, the servants and then the people upstairs. And there's a servant in the show named Thomas, and he's kind of a stinker character. And there's a story on NPR where they're talking about the new season just started, and everybody's very excited about it. And the person NPR calls Thomas, like, the evil Thomas. Well, the guy's scheming. And he is out to discredit other characters in the story for his own personal gain. But I don't know if I'd call him evil. You know, it's like when I heard that, I was like, well, he's a jerk. But is he evil? You know?
Yeah.
And that inspired a classroom activity that I did at the art center where I teach. And then I thought, well, I'll bring it as a quest too, because it was a lot of fun to do, is examining different kinds of evils, the spectrum of evils. And now we mentioned art and story a couple times in this episode. I don't know if we're just feeling nostalgic for that show or what. But this quest actually is enhanced by going to an old episode of Art and Story. This is where I'll give the first link power-up for this quest is Art and Story episode 82, which you can find at artandstorypodcast.com. You just do a search for episode 82 or the big bad guy in the search field, but this will also be linked in the show notes. And in it, Mark Rudolph and I attempted to come up with a rough approximation of some different kind of villain archetypes: megalomaniac, madness, revenge, greater good, force of nature, sociopath, and what I called dark inertia, having read the Bhagavad Gita once in my life. So you go and listen to that to hear a lot of thoughts on different types of bad guys, but it is by no means a definitive discourse on bad guys. It's a fun discussion about bad guys. And then the quest is to write a blog post assigning your own lists of villains to these categories. So, all right, Jersey says the megalomaniac, madness, revenge, greater good, force of nature, sociopath, and dark inertia. That's the first part of this class, is that we put all these on the board and we discuss some of our favorite bad guys or gals. And I am I'm very, very, what am I trying to say? I think it's important to understand that I'm not talking about supervillains here. I'm not talking about Dr. Doom and Ultron all the time. Bad guys or bad gals. Notice I don't say evil. It can be Thomas from Downton Abbey. It can be Moriarty from Sherlock Holmes. It can be, what was her name? Nancy from Little House on the Prairie, right? It could just be somebody who is a jerk, evil or just a jerk, right? And assign them to these different categories that I defined and why. Why you put them there? What was the behavior that they did? What was the part of their backstory or their biography that compelled you to say, oh, they're definitely that? Or are they multiple? Do they cross over? Because that's the other thing about these kinds of charts is they are by no means saying like, well, this character is pure force of nature, bad guy. That's the long and short of it. But this other part of their backstory or history or biography suggests otherwise, right? So maybe they cross over into different categories. Heroic quest, next part of the quest. If you feel that you really want to take on something really fun and challenging, design your own bad guy or gal and explain where they chart in these categories. Are they a greater good or revenge character? Are they madness, megalomaniac? Doesn't have to be a supervillain, after all, NPR and Thomas and so on. To turn in the quest, tweet a link to your post with the hashtag LIAQuest3 and to offer a power-up share link to a similar kind of post or podcast or artist talking about others' work, whether they call it inspiration or just getting excited to make things. You know, it's like anybody who's talking about this kind of stuff, point to that discussion. If it's a Twitter discussion, a Threaded discussion on Facebook, offer a link power up to say, here's what these people had to say about it, right? About making good bad guys. So deadline to turn in your quest is February 13th, the day before our next live episode, where we can drop a bomb here and say, we got a guest in our next episode.
We have a guest on our next episode?
What?
I was like, what reaction? Ding, ding, ding.
We do have a guest on our next episode, and it's somebody who we've talked about on the show a lot, almost as much as we've talked about Ryan Estrada.
That's tough to add up to. But yeah, we actually have mentioned him quite a bit, and actually a key technique that he has shared with the world.
Mm-hmm.
That's who right. Is this, Jersey?
So David Say of davidsay.com. David Say, cool. The creator of the Emergent Task Planner.
Yes, the Emergent Task Planner.
The first thing I look at when my workday begins and the last thing I look at when my workday ends. So,
awesome.
Capturing my day every day. This one's almost full. I'm going to have to get a new one.
Which one did you get? Your ETP? Or is that custom or?
Yeah, this is, I made a custom cover because I'm a nerd, right? This is my Transformers ETP.
Yeah.
But no, I've got the two up. Like
the two up. Version. Yeah, that's what I should have got. Yep. Because I've recently been playing around with these circle bound notebooks. Anyway, whole other topic. But yeah, but the large one is awesome. It's I'm learning the system, man. It's pretty cool.
But yeah, so he's going to be on, he's a productivity expert. He's a person who thinks an extensive amount about productivity and measurement and reflection.
Yeah. I mean, a very intentional artist. I mean, I hear he's an illustrator and, information designer and, it's going to be,
we're building a show just to lead up to talking to this man. It seems like
exactly. This is our resume.
No, but I mean, it's just like everything we talk about is stuff that this guy, you know, thinks really hard about and writes really wonderful things about. So I'm excited about that.
Exactly, and it's going to be fun. We're going to be chewing on all that stuff. I mean, I imagine we'll be talking about his different works and the whole. Productivity, applying Emergent Task Planner into your flow of your day and your art process and that kind of stuff.
So that will air Valentine's Day, February 14th, mm-hmm. at 9:15-ish p.m. Eastern time, if we can get the Google Plus Hangout to work properly. So you look forward to that. But you know, that means you got until the 13th if you want to have your quests discussed on the next show. And there's more that we're going to be rolling out with the quests in the weeks and months to come. So there's more to look forward to that with that. But I hope you guys will just play along just for the pure fun of it.
Yes.
So far, I've been learning new things.
Exactly, and that's the point. And so it's, there you go, approachable little exercise that we all get to learn together and share some stuff.
All right,
like amplifier learning.
Cool. All right. Well, thank you, Rob. I think we walked around this one pretty good.
I think so. Yeah. It's. I don't think we've put it to rest. We're probably going to come back to this one, and some of its tributaries. So.
Oh my gosh! I got one more announcement to make at the end of this one. And
cool.
I think that one deserves like an extra noise. All right, there's the noise, everybody, to wake you up a little bit. We've got a Google Plus page, a Tumblr page, and a Facebook page now where we're sharing a whole bunch of extra stuff. So you can find us at leanintoart.tumblr.com. I'm guessing facebook.com/leanintoart.
Yeah, we have it.
And then Google Plus, we don't have a custom name for that yet, but that's linked on all of the Lean Into Art episode posts. So what can you find there? A whole bunch of stuff that we started pumping in content, and this is possibly a topic for follow-up after our David Today episode, is blogging with a purpose, because I found it very easy to start just pumping new blog posts and resharing content into these different feeds because they had a very, very distinct and clear purpose. And I think it can easily spiral out into a segment on the show where we share some tips that we've gleaned from collecting items into the post. So this isn't just self-promotion post. This is us posting like different kinds of tutorials we found. I found a great tutorial today on how to get an isometric view in Google SketchUp. Isometric meaning that it's like the parallel lines.
It's partially an overhead view.
Partially overhead view where everything.
But it's not skewed by a third vanishing point. It's like two vanishing point overhead, right?
But the perspective lines are parallel instead.
But they're parallel. Oh yeah, so there really isn't a vanishing point. It eliminates the vanishing points.
Right, which Google SketchUp doesn't have naturally.
Yeah.
So you have to do a trick in order to get that perfect view. And I was working on some video game assets, or rather board game assets, which might get turned into a video game, and they wanted an isometric view. And then so I'm like, oh, I'll just make some of these. I'll build them in SketchUp, and then I'll pencil and ink them off of that. I got partway through, 2 hours in, I'm like, all right, let's look at an isometric view. What? There's no way. So anyway, so that led me to some searching to find some resources. Once I found the resource, put it on the Tumblr, right? So that's the kind of stuff that you're going to find there. And I reshared a Dee Jusson post, actually. She had some wonderful thoughts about not being precious in your art. So those are places to find us now. And actually, that might be a better place to find us than even emailing us if you want to get in touch with us, is either through the Twitter, through the Tumblr, Facebook, or Google Plus. I think we got the bases covered.
We do. and working on it. And working on it. You're doing awesome with the Tumblr. I gotta pick up the pace on the Facebook.
Yeah, we're dividing and conquering a little bit with this.
Yep.
So, but we'll get our attention there. So, okay, now I can say, Rob, thank you very much for this episode, for this discussion. We will loop back on it. Looking forward to the next one. Thank you, Dee Jusson, for participating in the quest. Looking forward to seeing what everybody else does with their quests. Quest number 3. Until next time, I have been Jersey Drozd of leanintoart.com and Jersey on Twitter.
And I have been Rob Stenzinger, also of leanintoart.com and Rob Stenzinger on Twitter. And thank you also, Jersey, for all the awesome work you do on setting us up for this show.
You're welcome. Okay, bye.
Show notes for this episode can be found at leanintoart.com. You can also follow us on Twitter at the user leanintoart, and you can reach us via email at leanintoart@gmail.com. And remember, leaners aren't wieners. Thanks for listening.